reason for parables or the purpose of the parables. We talked about the parable of the mustard seed last week. Who is the star here? Who is the star of this production?
The mustard seed?
Of the whole situation here. Who is the star? Who is he? But he's also the servant. That's Jesus. Jesus is a star of all of this. And Mark is telling us that how, in verse number 33, he says, "And with many such parables he was speaking the word to them as they were able to hear it." As they were able to hear it. Let's look at that. As they were able, as they kept on being able to hear it. That's in the passive voice. That's in the passive voice. What does that mean? Cindy, you remember? Passive voice?
Is that what she means? Does something to you?
What?
Somebody does something to you?
Yeah, that's right. So they were called to be able to hear this. Who was the ones that were called to be able to hear this?
The disciples.
The disciples. Who were the ones that were not able to hear it? Those are the ones that didn't have their hearts right, wasn't it? These are the ones that have hardened their hearts against God. Can you grieve the Father?
Oh, yeah.
Can you grieve the Son? They were. Can you grieve the Holy Spirit? Yes. They did it. They kept on doing it. And now, because of their attitude, they were not able to hear. They were not able to hear the story. Not able to hear the whole story. I was in a movie one time. Well, several times. But I was in one movie called Stallions. And I know the director of that movie very well now. I did not know him at all then. I drove up out in Chalfont, Archbishop, California, and his walls, and then Chalfont Valley. I drove up out there in my Jeep pickup, 1985. I'm living in Fish Lake Valley. And this director told the assistant director, "Get him. Get that man." And he came out there and got a hold of me, and he says, "We would like you to be, the director wants you to be in this movie. Would you consent to be in this movie? We need a stand-in, and you are the one." And I said, "I guess so." He said, "Sign this paper. I want to go and sign this paper." Now, he said, "Get in here. We'll tell you what to do." And they had the Chalfont Market all covered up with tarps and things, so no light, artificial light, could get in there at all. These movies, lighting is very important. Light's always important, always, isn't it? Light. These people, the church, was enlightened. The outside were in darkness. This whole thing was covered up. And the other day, I never knew anything about why he wanted me to be in that movie. And somebody came on the radio here a while back, and he said, "I heard you were in some movies." And I said, "Yeah, matter of fact, Doug over there is in Fish Lake Valley. He's the one that put me in the movie Stallions." Doug started telling about, he said, why he did it. He said there was a guy, Rip Torn was the actor, and he was out there, and he was out, and he was going to go help his friend that was dying, and he was in a car, and he pulls up here to this market, and he comes in here, and he's a city boy. And he comes into the market, and just before he gets there, I show the road out there, which goes to nowhere, Maryland. Up that hill, it's just road and road and road and road and nothing. And he tells all about this, and not only that, but his radiator has overboiled. And then he gets out, and I show him, and he pulls out the dipstick, and there's no oil in the crankcase. So he goes in there, and he's going to get something to drink, and was going to see about using the telephone or something. And I'm standing behind him. I have long braids down here with a cowboy hat on and everything. And I'm the typical Indian that he needs in the scene. He said, "That Indian has got it together. He's out here in his element. Nothing is unusual for him. He's got it together. His car could break down. Anything could happen to him, and he'd just go on like nothing happened. But he said, we've got this white boy here now from a city. And he's out there, and he's out of his element. His car is broke down. There is no hope at all of getting to where his friend is. And yet, he's standing up there all nervous, and this Indian standing there with all poised behind him. He said, the Indian is the star of the scene. That's me. That was the story of that. Well, these guys, these elite, don't get it. The religious elite in this group don't get it. Because they are like the city boy, out of his element. And now we got these fishermen and other what we might call undesirables of society all gathered together listening and hearing, and they're being enlightened by the master teacher. And so this is a story, and he's talking to them parables. Why is he using parables, Roger? Why is he using parables? Parables do two things.
They explain the supernatural in a way that you ought to be able to understand it with the natural world.
Okay. They explain the supernatural by the natural.
Right.
What else? How about it?
I think they last time. I mean, they stand the test of time because we can understand it with our totally different culture. There's a lot we can understand.
What else did he say? They did two things.
Well, they hid it from...
It was hidden. It was encrypted. It's an encrypted code. In World War II, they had the
Navajo
code talkers. The Navajo code talkers and the Lakota code talkers, because their language had been destroyed and there were only a few of them knew it, and so nobody else in the world knew it. They weren't even able to speak it in the schools and everything. And so they used them so the Japanese and the Germans could not break the code, because they didn't know how in the world what's going on. Jesus is talking in code here. He's sending da dit da da did it did it did it da, so to speak. He's sending code. The ones that have the light on hear it and they understand it. The ones that refuse the light in John the third chapter will not hear it. So let's go on now. In verse number 34, Charis de Parabales, uk elale autois kat idion de tois idiois mathetes epi lien panta. Charis is what? It's an adverb of place. Apart from, an adverb, apart from, of parable, parable A. Now, the Old Testament, they had a lot of parables in the Old Testament, didn't they? I'm doing that in one of my classes I'm teaching right now, the parables of the Bible, and I'm in the book of Zechariah. And Zechariah means what, Marilyn? Zechariah. Yes, what does Zechariah mean? Zechariah. God hears. But does man hear? Does man hear? God hears, but does man hear? Let's find out how many men hear. And independently apart from, a parable, not, he continued to speak. He kept on speaking. Third person singular, imperfect, indicative, active. Look at that. And that comes from laleo. Laleo. Boy. Laleo. Laleo. My brain's not working exactly right. I just about croaked this last week. Laleo. Okay, that's where it comes from, laleo. And what does this mean, Cindy?
Well,
while ill.
And not speaking like a person?
What is it?
Speaking like a person?
Speaking like a human being, using human mode of speech, laleo. All right? And let's, lalee. So it said he continued to speak with human in a human way of speaking to them, according to one's own, but to the private, his own learners, mathetes. What does mathetes mean, Cindy?
Habitual learners.
You got it here. See, you're remembering all this stuff. You get an A+ for tonight. Private learners. Habitual learners. Who were these disciples? How many were there?
Thousands.
It's not just the 12. The 12 were not disciples specifically. What were they?
Apostles.
They were apostles. And apostle means, apostello means what? One sent out with divine or royal authority. He kept on explaining. Look at that word, epieleo. And epi means upon, and leo means to loose. He kept on loosening up and letting them understand what he's talking about. He's teaching them spiritual things by physical. Explaining all of these things. He loosened their darkness. He loosened the light from darkness. They were cryptic to them, the unbelievers, but they became enlightened by this. 35. Kai lege. Autois en ekaine. Te hemera opsios genomenes dl thomen. Ace to paran. Now, we have another parable of action. A parable of action. And he says to them during that day, that evening, the evening of that day, hopsios, that means the evening of that day having become. Let us proceed, pass through, and pass over unto the other side. Where are we?
Galilee.
We're in Galilee. We're on the Sea of Galilee. We're going to go from one side of the Sea of Galilee to the other. How many of you have done that? Aha, girl, young lady, you've been there, haven't you? This is about like Lake Isabella or something, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not real big.
It's not a great big lake, but it's there. You know, it's pretty far. I don't remember how many miles it is across it from one end to the other.
But it took about from Capernaum to Tiberias. It seems like it took about, it seems like it took about an hour or so.
Yeah, something like that. They weren't going really fast. You're going along at a leisurely speed, and I went from Galilee also, or Capernaum also, to Tiberias. Then we ate this Peter fish. That's what they call Peter's fish. What kind of fish is that?
That's tilapia.
That's where it came from. That's where they're very prolific fish. They put them over here and they breed these fish and they sell them. That's this tilapia is Peter fish. That's the fish that Peter caught, supposedly. So over to the other side. They're going to go from one side of the Sea of Galilee to the other now, or the Lake of Galilee, or Gennesaret. 4 and verse 36. What's the first word there, Marilyn?
Kai.
All right, you got that, everybody? Say Kai. Kai, aphantes. Ton oklon. Para la bonusen. Auton. Hos. Ain. En. To. Ployo. Kai. Ola. Ploya. Ain. Met. Autu. All right. And having sent away, nominative plural masculine, second aorist participle active, having sent away the crowd. Tone oklon. How many people were here? Remember I told you how many people were here a while ago? How many people are here? Now, tone oklon. How many people's in an oklon or oklos? Tone oklon means accusative singular masculine, okay? How many's here, Cindy?
I want to say 15,000.
Well, at least 5,000 to 10,000. At least 5,000 to 10,000. Oh, Chloe, that's plural. It would be 10,000 to 20,000 or so. But right here, we got at least 5,000 to 10,000 people. So we don't have a little bitty, itty bitty group, do we? This is a large group. And then it says, third person plural present, indicative act, and they take him as he kept on being in the boat. He kept on being in the boat, so now they're going to take him in the boat. To the other, and the other, Allah, other boats, they're kept on being with him. All right, there's more than one boat here. They got a little fleet of boats. And these are not ships, they are boats. Like Maryland probably is about the size of our boat that we used to have, about 23-foot boat or so. Mm-hmm. They're not ships, they're boats. 437, Kai, Ganete, La, Lops, Megale, Anemu, Kai, Ta, Kimata, Epibalane, Aisto Pluyon, Hoste, Ede, Gemesteste, To Pluyon. And it became for itself. It became for itself. Tell me, explain that, Cindy. It came for itself. Why for itself?
Just kind of just
what tells us for itself? Present indicative what?
Middle voice.
So middle voice says it came up of its own. Now the Sea of Galilee had a lot to do in Jewish tradition. The Mishnah and the Talmud, they talked about this. And what was the Sea of Galilee? The bottom of the Sea of Galilee is pretty deep, by the way. It's pretty deep.
Gates of hell.
The gates of hell were down there, they thought. Okay. Now, the Sea of Galilee at this time had a lot of salt water in it. The Sea of Galilee is above sea level, or below sea level, isn't it? Here's the Mediterranean Sea over here, and here's the Sea of Galilee down here. And here's the whole Jordan Rift. And all the Jordan Rift is under, below sea level. When the pilots fly there, they can fly under sea level all the way from the Dead Sea to Galilee, all below sea level. And so what else does that tell you? That there's probably saltwater springs in the bottom of it. Because if the sea level's here and this is here, maybe as there's fissures in the ground, saltwater springs are coming up, and they are in that area. They thought this was part of the ocean. That's why they called it sea, because it's got a lot of salt water in it. The Dead Sea. What's down there in the Dead Sea? You been down there? You been down there at the Dead Sea? I've been down at the Dead Sea. That is one of the most concentrated areas of salt and minerals in the world. It's like Mono Lake up there where we live. Mono Lake. And you can go out there and you can lay on it. Did you go out there and lay on that sea?
No, because I shaved my legs.
You can go out there and just lay on that water and it will support you because the water is so heavy. The salt came out of the Sea of Galilee. Now, when Israel took back over that area there, they went down and stopped up some of the saltwater springs. Did you ever hear about this besides me? Okay, they went down and stopped up these, and so they have a lot of fresh water coming in there, and the water is more potable and more usable for irrigation. And there's less salt going down into the Dead Sea now than it was before. And then it says, and became. Now this area, we have this area, and this area is, according to them, possessed of demons. There's demons around all over the place. And there's great big gigantic mythological creatures that are called what?
Leviathans.
And these leviathans go out there and they stir up the waters and they live in the bottom of the sea, and these are the guardians to the gates of hell. And they think, now when they get out there, now all these guys have been listening to all these stories. Used to at nighttime, when I was a little boy, they'd get around a bonfire or something like that, or a cook stove or whatever, and they'd sit around and tell these scary stories. Did they do it that in your family, Marilyn?
Yeah.
Your grandma and grandpa told you about ghost stories and all kinds of stuff and spooks and different things.
Yeah.
Well, now, they did this back in this period of time, too. They talked about these ghost stories. So now they're out there and they're living a ghost story. The Leviathan is stirring. The Leviathan was what the staffs of Moses and Aaron, whatever you want to call it, Aaron threw it down. It was Moses' staff. It was Adam's staff and handed all the way down. But when it hit the ground in Pharaoh's palace, it became a tannin. And this is a tannin. This is a dragon, not a serpent. And the other two, from Janus and Jambres, they became dragons also. They think the dragging is whooping up to sea. In the book of Jonah, they believe that one of the Leviathans were stirring up the storm out there, that it was a supernatural, and that God, because of the wickedness of somebody on that ship, had turned the dragons loose on them, the dragons of the deep. And then Jonah said, throw me in there. And when they threw him in there, it became calm. But what happened to him? Gulp. The dragon got him. So now we got a Leviathan of the gates of hell. And when these storms erupted violently and immediately on this lake, they thought that was evil spirits and Leviathans that were after them. And it became a hurricane, la lops, a strong wind. Marilyn, we live out there in the wind zone, don't we? She thinks that every place in the world in the springtime that the wind blows 120 miles an hour. It doesn't do that every place. It does it out there. That's a wind zone, right? That's where it comes to. When they took out the pasture land out there, the natural pasture where the wild horses and elk and everything, when they plowed up that ground, it started moving real estate on that. And they had great big giant cottonwood trees out there, big trees, and they stopped the wind, and then that kept it from blowing. When they plowed that ground up, Bakersfield, the dust in Bakersfield comes from there. That's where it comes from. Blowing. It is a wind zone. It is a place where winds very violently come together. And it is predictably they do that. So now they planted a lot of trees out there in that area. Again, like it was in the old days. And during the Dust Bowl in the 30s and 40s, people left the Dust Bowl. Those people out there since the 30s and 40s, they've had the same problem, but they didn't leave it. Finally, by I don't know what, whether they finally got the hint or what, they're putting a lot of places out there in trees because basically they don't have a lot of water now. And it's slowing down the winds a little bit. We haven't had the violent winds. But I wore out a tractor out there moving dirt this deep in my yard all the time. Deep, year after year after year, blowing dirt in deep. Big sand, the Dust Bowl. Well, here we have this type of wind. This hurricane force winds. Hurricane force. A wind great. And wind. Now look at that word magale. Lalops megale great. And the wind anemu. And the waves. The savage waves. These waves. Marilyn, you ever been out in the ocean when the waves become very violent?
Yeah, and yeah. I don't like it.
Oh, we were out there in the ocean one time. And it took me 2 years to get her out of Port San Luis Harbor. 2 years, she said, fish right here. There's fish down here. I said, Marilyn, the fish live out there. They have little houses and villages out there. We got to go find the villages where the fish live. They don't live here. They come wandering through here, but they live out there. Nope. Finally, one day I went out there, and she started catching big fish, and then it was okay from then on. We went out there one time, and it was just like this. The wind was blowing terribly, and the waves were just splashing over the boat, and I can hardly stand up in the boat like this. And we got out there, and tears were just flowing out of her eyes, and she was just bawling. I said, "Sweetheart, you want to go back in?" She said, "Let's fish." It was so funny. But we caught fish, didn't we? We caught a whole bunch of fish. A whole lot of fish. Now, the waves were like this. This is spooky, okay? Now, they're out there, and they think, I didn't think 1 minute that the Leviathan was stirring up the deep out there, did I? I didn't say one word about a Leviathan, did I?
No, you talked about sharks.
I talked about sharks. We were out there one time. We had the camera up on the dash of the boat looking out there, and we saw a shark come up and look at us in the boat and go by. I didn't see it in person. I saw it after I had the film. It just comes up there, looks over there in the boat, and goes on. Sharks like fat people. They like real fat people because there's a lot of energy in that fat. Seals are fat. When they take one bite of a person, if there's not enough fat in there, they spit you out. All right. So if you're skinny, you don't have to worry about it. A great wind and the waves, epibolain. Third person singing in perfect condition, they kept on dashing. It means a pawn to throw. Smash, smash, smash. Beating, beating, beating the boat. Beating unto the boat. That word ace there, look at that. Extension, limitation of thought, or verbal action. They were hitting the boat and they were going over the boat and in the boat. And they're in there bailing the water out. In our modern boats, we have bilge pumps. You know who invented the bilge pumps? The Chinese. The Ming Dynasty. They built, and they had rust-proof nails in their big ships. They had 319 ships, I think it was, in that great big armada they would send around all over the place. Just look at the other people. There wasn't anything there that they wanted. Said those people too savage and crude and stinky. We don't want them. There's nothing there we want. So they just went out there, and the ships would come in. And they think an island came up because there was so many of them. Scared them. Chinese would look over there and say, nothing there we want. Go on. But they had bilge pumps. They had these bilge pumps in their ships. And their ships were, the Pinta, the Nita, and the Santa Maria were like canoes compared to the ships. And this is in the 1300s. Unto the boats. Unto the boat, that is. So as to already to be full. Look at that one. Gamiste. The thing was filled up. The boat was full. No bilge pumps. Buckets, buckets, bucket brigade, boy, bucket, bucket, bucket. 438. Kai autos ein en te tria. Trimne, epi to pros kem phalaon, kathedon, kai ege rusen, auton, kai legusen, auto didaskele, u mele, sui hote apale methe. And he kept on being in the Tramnathe, the hindermost part of the boat, in the back of the boat, down, upon the mattress, a pillow. He was down there sleeping. He's wore plumb out. He's wore out. Did Jesus need sleep? Did he get hungry? Did he ever get nervous? What was he doing in the Gethsemane? Did he have all of this natural senses that we have? Did he get hot? Did he get cold? Sure he did. Now he's so tired that he's just down there laying on a mattress or a pillow in the boat just going to sleep. He's tired. My daughter, Dakota. We'd go out in a boat, and we had two boats since Marilyn and I have been married. We had a Tierra Pursuit, and we had a what was that other one called, Marilyn?
I know you're going to ask me.
It's one of the Galey's boats. They don't make them anymore.
I can't think of it.
What?
I can't think of it.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a boat with a cabin in it with beds. When we got out in the ocean, Dakota would hit that mattress in there and go to sleep instantly and just sit there and rock her to sleep. Rock her to sleep. We were out there one time, and there was a storm coming in from the south and a storm coming in from the north, and it was coming in like this, and we were out there, and the motor quit. I got back there and started pulling on the outboard motor, and I bought this AMSOIL, and the AMSOIL had ruined the rings in it, so it didn't have much compression. It was two-cylinder, 9.5 horsepower Mercury, and it would hit and miss and hit and miss, and here the storm's coming at me. I mean, we got to move. It's totally, totally just like glass right there, but the waves are big right down there. You can see them, and the waves are big, and here's this thing coming from both ends, and we're going to be right in the middle of it where it clashes. Dakota's asleep down there. We never said anything to her. I got on and called the Coast Guard, and I said, I might need your help. Keep an eye on us. I said, I'm going to come in. So that old engine was sitting there, and I reminded me of that movie Jaws with that captain up there kind of giving that boat. That old Jaws chasing them, you know. And here we go. We're coming in. It goes, just missing all the way in, but it just kept on going. I'm glad we didn't have any headwinds because we'd never made it. We putted on around there and putted on around there and just kept going and kept going and kept going. And I putted all the way into the harbor and right up to the deal. Marlon, it says you're buying a new boat. No more of this.
It was a trophy.
It's what?
A trophy.
Yeah, the trophy. It was a trophy boat. All right, now he's in the rear of the boat. Dakota was in the front of the boat. I was in the rear of the boat because that's what the deck and everything was. And it had a wet deck. The water comes over, and it just automatically goes out the back, scuppers. They didn't have any scuppers on this boat. This boat here, you had to bail it out. Now, Jesus isn't bothered about this at all. He's the master of the universe. Isn't he? This is another parable of action, remember. What is this going to teach them?
Well, he can pretty much do whatever he wants
because
he knows when he's
going to
die.
That's right. Drowning would be easy.
Yeah, it ain't
yet. It's not my time yet. But they didn't know that.
No.
They thought the Leviathans were, the supernatural powers were overcoming their master. No way. Let's see what happens. Upon the cushion, he laid his head, sleeping. Nominee singular mass and present participle active, sleeping. And they raise up him. They go in there, get up here, come here. And this reminds me of the story of Jonah. What are you doing down here? Come here. He's fast asleep, and they raise him up. And they say to him, Didaskale. What does this mean, Brother Roger? Didaskale.
It shows teacher.
It's a teacher, all right. Didaskalos. But what?
Like
it is vocative singular masculine, isn't it? It's vocative case of address. Teacher. Now, they didn't call him Kyrios here, did they?
No.
Ah, that means what?
Lord.
Master. Kyrios, master. They're afraid now we're going to die. Teacher, we're going to die. Not being to you that we perish. Don't you understand? Do you wish us to die here? 439. Kai. Diegerethes. Epitimason. To animo. Kai epain, tain thalassane, ziota, ziopa, pe fi mo sol, kai, echo possen, ho animos, kai agenito, galene, Megale. Now let's look at this. This is the parable, people. We're talking about parables all the time. Parables are spoken parables. This is a parable of action. A parable of action. And having been violently raised up, they shook him out. Come here. Help us. Wake up. Now. And he rebuked. Look at this. Epitimeson. Tamao. It's epi and tamao. He rebuked them. Or he was caused to rebuke them. Third person singular, first aorist, indicative passive. He rebuked the wind. The wind. He rebuked the winds. He rebuked them, the winds. And he said to the sea. This is the master of the universe now. Now he's doing this by the power of the Holy Spirit. But he was the one that spoke the whole creation into existence. This is the one. This is a creator right here. And he says to the sea, shut up. Shut up and be still. Second person singular, present imperative. Siopao. Be still and shut up. Be muzzled. It was howling. Marilyn? We're up in Nevada sometimes. Does the wind howl?
Yeah.
Out there where we are, out there in the wind zone, does the wind howl?
Yeah.
It howls. We were up there in Fish Lake Valley here a while back, and we were up there for a week, and it was blowing pretty hard, about 30 to 40 knots an hour. That's a little faster than, or pretty knots, that is, not knots per hour, knots. And that's probably 50 miles an hour. Well, out there on the farm, we have windbreaks. And inside the windbreak is where I have the little wind speedometer out there. And inside the windbreak, it was 77 miles per hour inside the windbreak. So it was whistling Dixie up there, but it was a hurricane down here at that time. It was blowing over 100 miles an hour outside. It blew one tree out of the ground, pulled it up by the roots with the wind. And that's what's going on. And the wind is howling, and now all of a sudden, what happens? Now, this is a miracle of action, a parable of action. Be muzzled. And he ceased the wind. He ceased the wind. The wind ceased. Now, what do you think about these old boys out there in this boat with him? Because they have been told these stories that this is a Leviathan and this is supernatural powers out here and that the gates of hell are stirred up. And the gates of hell get stirred up and they swallow down these people and we're going to die and swallowed by these giants and monsters. But now, according to their thinking, the monsters are silent. He cut off and cut down and ceased the wind and he became Galene, calm and tranquil, great calm. Many people try to predict the weather. Jesus commanded the weather. Many people try to predict the weather, but Jesus commanded the weather. Now, we've had some kind of weird stuff. This is unusual weather. We have unusual weather? Yeah, it's unusual. It's acting crazy. It's not acting normal.
Global warming.
Yep. Anyway, it's changing. It's changing. The weather's changing. It's changing. Cindy, do you know what HARP is?
HARP.
Have you ever heard of it? HARP.
I'm sure you're not talking about what I'm thinking.
HARP. HARP is a system up in Alaska that America put up there with a lot of antennas, and they have a tremendous power plant up there that just fires these radios. And they actually just literally saturate the airwaves, the ionosphere. And they're trying to command the weather with it. You ever heard of sowing clouds? So seeding the clouds. And they seed the clouds so it'll rain. And you see airplanes up there seeding the clouds, trying to make it rain. During World War I, World War II, during the Napoleonic Wars, during the Civil War, during the European Wars, all of the wars that we've had, this warring affects the weather to some extent. It seeds the clouds with gunpowder and smoke and everything. Back in what we call the Middle Ages, over here in America, the Indians were burning off the Great Plains, and it caused the Mini Ice Age in Europe because of all the dust and all the smoke in the atmosphere. What happened when Mount St. Helens blew its top? What happened to the weather?
It got colder.
It got cold, and it snowed, and it rained. I remember right after Mount St. Helens, I was going across that desert, and you got to see this too, girl. I went across the Mojave Desert all the way. I left Bakersfield. I'd had back surgery. And I left Bakersfield after I had gone to the doctor and stayed and recovered. They took the stitches out of my back and everything. And here I go. And I'm going back to Fish Lake Valley. This is back in about 86 or 88, something like that. 88, I guess. I went over the Tehachapi, and it was snow all the way. I went across that desert, and there was 2 and 3 foot of snow everywhere. There was only one color. It was monochrome, and that's white. And I had this little Toyota Tercel station wagon, and I'm going with a little front-wheel drive, and I go out across that, and I'm looking out there, and I said, boy, Mount St. Helens, you did a good job. That's what I knew what was going on out there. I went all the way up there, and I finally got up there to the Ranch House Cafe, and they stopped me, and they said I had to put my chains on. So I got out there with my bad back and got underneath that thing and put chains on it. But you know what? The snow was worse back there than what it was ahead. I put the chains on, and I drove all the way to Bishop in that snow. And then when I left Bishop, I took my chains off and drove over Montgomery Pass with my little old tires, and got in and right up to my place, and my place had this much snow out there in the yard. I went right on top of the snow, and the ground was so frozen that I couldn't drive a pick in it or anything else until about June that year. The ground was froze over 3 feet deep. Everybody's pipes froze up except for mine because they were buried 6 feet deep. I made plans. Plan ahead. All right. And so now it became tranquil, great tranquility, because the master of the seas and the winds and everything is there. He could have made it hot that day. 110 on the Sea of Galilee if he wanted it. Woof, just like that. Now in verse number 40. Kai epein altois ti la le eloi este upo, and then there's ek uk in there, and then ekete piston. And he says to them, why are you so cowardly? Why are you so cowardly? Why are you so fearsome? You all right, brother?
Yeah.
Low blood sugar. Why are you so cowardly? Are you? Why do you keep on being so cowardly? Not yet ye have faith. The master of the universe is there, and they thought they were drowning. The master of the universe is there, and they thought they were drowning. Do you have any questions? Any questions of this? Who the meal? Nothing? Now let's look at verse number 41 and we'll finish right there. 41. The last verse in this chapter. Kai, F-A, Be, Thason, Phobon, Megon, Kai, Elegon, Pros, Alelus, Tis, Ara, Altois, Hutois, that is, Eston, hote kai ho animos kai he thalase hipa kuhe autu. And they feared. They were struck with great fear. They were struck with great fear. And they feared terror. That word terror, phobia. They had a phobia of this sea before, didn't they? They had been fishermen out on the sea. These were fishermen. These were seamen. These were sailors. And when this happened out on the sea before, their lives were in great jeopardy. But this time, something happened different than ever before. They feared with great terror, great. And they continued to say, they kept on saying, third person plural, imperfect indicative active toward one another, who then, therefore, is this one? Because both the wind and the sea obey. They hearken, they obey. It literally means they are in subjection as a captain would be over a private. That's what it means. That's a military term right there. All of this is in subjection of the great powers. They obey to him. So we started out where tonight? 433. Okay, 433 through 41. Did you learn something tonight? Did you learn a little Greek? Do you see him using the imperfect tense all the time? And where does the imperfect tense come from? What idea does he have in this imperfect tense?
Action.
Huh? Action, but he's thinking in Hebrew and writing in Greek. That's what's going on. He's thinking in Hebrew and writing in Greek. All right. Got a question? Any of you got a question? Marilyn, you got a question? Marilyn, do you have a question?
I'll have to think about it.
All right. How about you, Pamela?
No.
Sharon?
No, I'm thinking of a question.
You're thinking about a question. How about you, Cindy?
I will next week.
You'll have a question next week?
I'm reading a book right now. So.
Oh, you're reading a book?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of book?
It's called It Is Islam.
What?
It's called It Is Islam.
Oh, It Is Islam.
It's written by Glenn Beck. It's about Islam.
The call of fate to come, the universal call of fate.
Yeah, I'm just kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't have any questions yet, but I will. Mm-hmm. I will.
The universal call of fate. Did you know Brigitte Bardot was jailed 5 times? Did you know Brigitte Bardot was jailed 5 times? Because she spoke out against Islam. France is supposed to be one of the great pinnacles of freedom of speech and courtesy of what you believe. But France, as you know, has become under Sharia law tremendously. And now in her own country, she spoke out. And I read this Wednesday night to the church that I'm a pastor to. She spoke out 5 times. The last time was, I think, $29,000 fine that they fined her for causing turmoil and riots. Every time she'd speak out, they'd have riots. Every time she'd say something to defend her country against Islam, there would be riots. And she's inciting riots because she's speaking this. And she said, we are victims of this coming universal call of fate, just like it was before. History has repeated itself over and over and over again. She said the monster has lit here and we're being entangled in the white spider web of Islam.
People and so, in Germany are starting to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
Because they said that the women are saying they're afraid to go out at all.
Yes.
And so they're calling on the president to do something.
Yes.
In Germany, that she won't do.
Now, why are the women afraid to go out?
Because because they get attacked every time they do.
They get raped.
Yeah.
These men, these adherents to Islam, can rape anybody they want to, as long as it's not an Islamic woman.
I don't understand why. Maybe it's because I can't think like they do. There's so much evidence throughout the world of what they're doing, the evil that they're doing, but people just don't want to believe it. I don't get.
First of all, they've been brainwashed by everybody from Bill Clinton to George Bush and all of this, all the way here. We've been brainwashed by this East, that Islam is a peaceful religion. Islam is not a peaceful religion. Muhammad was not a peaceful man. And all they're doing is what he taught in his day. They went out and raped and pillaged. And to rape a woman was nothing. It was nothing. You rape a kafir, you've done nothing wrong. The only way you can commit a crime in Islam is to commit a crime against another Islamic person, because everybody else is kafir. And there's no boundaries on that. This is what we call situation ethics. You don't rape an Islamic woman, but you can do anything you want to these others. This is fair play. You can rob anybody else, but you cannot rob another Islamic person, because they are the human beings. Everybody else is kafir. And what does kafir mean? Dung. It's infidel, but it means dung. It's literally dung. Body refuse, that's what they call them. They're, and this is another thing, they're fatalist. If Allah wills. They ask Muhammad one time when they went in and took over these cities, and they would take and hold women hostage. And they ask him, now we want to rape these women, and it's okay for us to rape the women? Yeah, that's okay, you rape the women. Well, should we not try to impregnate them? Should we withdraw? So we go and impregnate them. So if they're pregnant, maybe they won't give us much ransom money for them. He said, oh, don't worry about it. If they're supposed to be pregnant, they will be pregnant. All the wills. Fatalism. They look at it like that. They look at this. And when they go out and say, Allah Akbar, and pull a cord and push a trigger of a bomb and blow themselves up, they think they're going to go right in, because this is glory to them. Blood and guts is glory to them. That's the most wonderful thing you can do. A woman, if she's accused of any infidelity or whatever, she is doomed for the rest of her life. And a woman that might have children and things, and she'll go out there and blow herself up because she's redeeming herself before her people, that she become the hero. Otherwise, she's kafir also. Dumb. She's refuse. They'll tell her, do this or take these razor blade and cut your wrist or cut your throat. You know.
I was reading an article just recently that this guy believes that there's only like 15% of the population in the world are Christian. And he said that he believes that it's always been like 15%, but it's just like, just taking the United States, that today it's acceptable to say you're not a Christian, but back in when I was a kid, or even before that, people who weren't Christians, it wasn't acceptable to say that you weren't.
That's right.
And you, so even though they acted like they weren't, they would say, "Oh yeah, I'm a Christian. I just don't go to church, mm-hmm. but I'm a Christian." But mm-hmm. now it's more like that's the acceptable culture today. It's more in to say, I'm not a Christian. In the
I'm an atheist. It's all right to be an atheist,
yeah.
or whatever.
I'm a really good person.
But in the South, Southern Baptist, you know, this is a Southern Baptist church. Missionary Baptists are Southern Baptists. I mean, some of them will go, ah, don't say that. Yes, we are. It's fact. Anyway, the Southern Baptist, in any place in the South, you didn't go to a restaurant on Sunday. Now, we know that Sunday is not the Sabbath, but this got pawned off on us by Catholicism. We know that. And They didn't plow their fields. They didn't work on Sunday at all. They did not do anything. And a lot of the women, very religious women, would not cook on Sunday. They would cook on Saturday and something that they could eat the next day, so she wouldn't be working. Now, we know that that's pretty foolish, but this was the blue laws. Why, that's not acceptable. That, I mean, 7-Eleven is going on and all this, you know, they're all going, restaurants are going 24 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week. But see, it's okay to do that now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. 50 years ago, that wasn't good.
Oh, when I was a kid, all the stores were closing on Sunday.
That's right.
You didn't go shopping on Sunday.
Yeah. You didn't do that. You stayed at home on Sunday. You did that. That's what you did. You stayed at home, and you rested, and you worshiped. We had four church services on Sunday when I pastored. Four church services on Sunday. Sunday school, preaching. BTC, preaching. And I did it all. All four of them. Now I feel like I'm almost unemployed. Preaching once at the church on Sunday, and then here also. And this, they allow me to come here so I can be with you. So it wouldn't be such a shock for me to just walk off and leave you. It was not very easy. I was gone almost all summer long and part of the fall just to get used to not being here. My first vacation I ever took in 20 years at this church was this last year. But I'm still here some. And I try to do that because I love you guys, especially. Very, very, very much. I hope I answered a little bit of that. All right. You ready to go out and do something eternal? You're going to do it whether you like it or not. You're going to do something eternal. All right, Brother Roger, would you dismiss us in prayer, please, brother?
Father, thank you. Thank you for all your provision. I pray for guidance and direction in all things that I engage in. Pray for healing for class members and their families. I thank you for all you've done for us. In the name of Christ.